Ash, and we're building bridges to listeners over WBAI 99.5 FM and WPFW 89.3 FM DC, and over radio and internet stations across the country. The shot heard around the world, even by Jeff Bezos. The workers were the Davids, whose grassroots organizing was the slingshot that felled the Goliath anti-union Amazon. Now we're about to do what formerly fired Amazon warehouse worker Chris Smalls, now president of the Amazon Labor Union, did when the vote tally for unionization came in. We're about to break open a bottle of champagne and continue to do what he did, which was to build the labor movement.
Joining us now are three of the Amazon workers who created this monumental worker victory. Connor Spence, worker at the JFK 8 facility. Julian Mitchell Israel, field director of the Amazon Labor Union Tier 1, worker at the LDJ 5 facility. And Angelica Maldonado, labor activist from a huge Staten Island Amazon facilities.
Congratulations, that's the first thing, and don't spill any of the champagne, any one of you, on our equipment here. I want to start with April 4th. To me, it's a very prophetic moment. April 4th was the day Martin Luther King's life was taken in Memphis, where he had gone to support the city's sanitation workers who were on strike, who carried picket signs with the slogan, "I am a man." Personally, I think the victory of you low-wage Amazon workers who have been subjected to terrible hardships and indignities on your job are a continuation of the legacy of Dr. King, what he stood for and what he fought for. Connor and Julian and Angelica, how do you view the significance of this vote for union against the largest, wealthiest employer on the planet? Why don't we start with Connor and then have a discussion, the three of you.
As far as this victory goes, we always knew that it was going to be an uphill battle, but that if we were victorious, it would send a signal to every worker in the country and every worker in the world that it doesn't matter how big of an opponent you're fighting. If you organize and team up with your workers, you can win literally any victory. That's just what we wanted to communicate to people and hopefully inspire workers throughout the country to do the same thing that we did, organize and demand better conditions.
Julian?
And I agree with Connor. I think that this victory speaks to sort of a new wave of labor movement in the United States and hopefully around the world. I think for a really long time, unionism has become an ideological thing in itself. Unions have become an organizational structure that is like actually limiting to worker power in a sense because of the political nature of unions. But I think the grassroots nature of this, the fact that, you know, Connor, the vice president, Angie, the head of the workers committee, like these are people who were truly Amazon workers and are stepping up to fight for their own rights, just take back that power. I think this is going to spark a new type of labor movement in the U.S. and beyond.
Angelica?
I totally agree with what my colleague said. It's been a very victorious chapter for us, but we couldn't have done it without the workers. It being that, you know, JFK 8 was such a diverse building, filled with about 7,000 workers, and we succeeded in unifying everyone.
Well, you've won based upon a series of demands that you had, which was then carried on to contract demands. There are far too many to get into them in detail right now, but if each of you could take one of the demands that you felt personally brought you to this organizing drive and talk about how you use that demand to organize other workers. Connor, do you want to start that?
So it's no secret. Amazon has extremely high turnover. It's 150% per year. So for 7,000-8,000 workers at JFK 8, that means in a year they'll go through about 12,000 people. And it's not an accident that they set it up that way. They have set it up that way. It's intentional. So, you know, one of the ways they kind of reinforce that is by limiting internal promotions. It's very, very difficult for Tier 1 associates to make their way up through the ranks and get promoted. And so, the average Amazon worker doesn't really stay for longer than 8 months because there aren't really a lot of opportunities for them. So for me, I would very much like to improve the promotion policies and make it so that know, managers are not externally hired so much. They are internal hires. It's actually funny because certain managers will tell you if you're a tier one associate with any kind of education, you have a better chance of being promoted if you quit and apply from the outside than you do applying internally for these positions. So that's something that, in my mind, definitely needs to change, because there's a lot of people on the campaign, veterans of Amazon, who have been working for a long time and were never given the opportunity to move up or get the recognition they deserve for all their hard work.
And Angelica?
That my biggest focus on for the bargaining contract would be job security. A lot of the main focus for the bargaining contract was the pay raise for a lot of workers in the building. And that's one thing I totally agree with, but what good is a pay raise if there's lack of job security? You can get a pay raise one week, and the next week you're accidentally booted out of the system and can't even speak to HR about getting a job back. So that's one thing that a lot of workers in the building have faced. Speaking to workers while phone banking and hearing their story about how they came to work one day and their badge wasn't working because, you know, our app, you know, deleted them out the system. What good is job security if you can't? What good is, you know, the pay raise if you can't get your job back?
Julian?
Yeah, I mean, I think the two things they said are definitely the prime issues. I guess one additional one I might add is Amazon's lack of accommodations and the fact that they push people out when they get injured on the job. I've talked to so many workers who, I just got a text from someone today who slipped on oil from like a leaking thing, broke his back, and basically has been almost pushed out by Amazon and forced to quit because they don't want to take responsibility for these things. They don't want to have to pay for better medical coverage, anything like that. And that's just, you know, the tip of the iceberg. I think there's so many stories of people who are coming in with disabilities or who injure themselves on the job or whatever it is that are not taken care of by Amazon because they are just always putting profit over people every single day of the week, every single chance they get.
I want to find out about the conditions that you experienced, but first pick up on something Angelica was saying. I mean, initially you mentioned there's like 7,000 plus workers. These are huge facilities. Sorting and stacking and distribution centers and so on. But how indeed do you take a very disparate workforce that is being told by management constantly, what the heck do you need a union for? They're not going to do anything for you. And what are you going to do with a local union? It's not a national union. So, Angelica, what did you do to bring people together to vote in union?
I would say one of the main things I did was be completely transparent, and at the same time, I was willing to be vulnerable. What a lot of people expected from a union was for us to just go in there and tell everyone to vote yes, but that's not what we did. We were completely vulnerable. There was times where I had to tell my personal story to many workers, my personal story being me being a single mother, dedicating my off days to help thousands of workers, and then still maintaining my job at Amazon, working 7 days a week, almost 20 hours. There was a lot of days where, you know, a lot of the workers, they would question why I was doing this. I literally told them because we deserve better. Once you can convince people that they deserve better and the conditions that they're in now are not ideal, that's when you can form a relationship to further educate them on what they do deserve.
But didn't Amazon play people off against each other? And I have to say, watching the TV commercials, they say, oh my goodness, look at me. I had a member of my family who was sick, and now Amazon is giving me health benefits to include them. Or one I recall specifically, I wanted to be a nurse. I wanted to have an education. Ah, Amazon is there to help me with that. So how do you get through that kind of high-powered, slick advertisement and make people say, wait a minute, we, the workers, we can do better? Take it further, Angelica. Connor and Julian, join in. I want to know how you organized, because this was a long battle. This is a couple of years since you all got started.
What I would say is that, so Amazon did a lot of stuff that backfired. Fortunately, I could relate to that story on the commercial because my mom, she's a nurse, right? So I would let a lot of people know, well, my mom's a part of a union, 1199, well-known union. And fortunately for them, they have health care, great health benefits, great union benefits in general. And so when you compare Amazon health care plans, me personally, I pay $54 a week out of my paycheck for health care for me and my son. So when you compare that to my mom, who didn't have to pay that, I had health care until I was 26. And I explain all these things to an Amazon worker who's never been in a union. They become very, you know, very keen to the idea that, you know, we can get better, that knowledge is power, and just asking and retaining the information can get them a long way.
Yeah, Angie's right in that they did a lot of stuff that did completely backfire on them. They have this approach to talking to workers where it's almost like they infantilize us or like they think that we're stupid. In their captive audience meetings where they would, you know, bring people in and try to scare them away from voting for a union, they would be very explicit and say, you know, do your research, get the facts, and vote no. Like, you know, do all your research and then don't do anything with it. Just do what we tell you. So a lot of their approaches did backfire on them because people didn't like that they were being instructed to make a particular choice. I mean, the way we overcame that was, like you said, it was a long campaign. It was an endurance test for us, one-on-ones with hundreds and thousands of workers to just try to, you know, help them understand it's not a political choice. It's just, are there things that can be improved about your working conditions right now? Are there things about your job that you would change? And do you right now have the power to change those things? And the answer is no. And then the next logical step is, well, how could you have the power? It's if we all united together and made these demands together, suddenly they would have to listen to us and take us seriously.
I agree with everything that both of them said. I think like that point about Amazon digging their own grave is really true. And I think that's also true on like a sort of labor level. Like no one walks through the turnstiles of JFK 8 or LBJ 5 and is like thrilled to be at work, right? It's not a good environment to be in. It's not fun work, and they make it worse with all of the things that they try to pull. And really, when you have these conversations with workers, when you have these one-on-ones, that is what convinces people, because it's not about telling them, like, oh, here's all the reasons to vote yes, or here's the ideology of the union or anything like that. It's not about union to them. It's about literally just like listening, really, what it comes down to. I think effective organizing, especially in a grassroots scenario like this, is about listening. And asking people the questions so that they start thinking about the fact that they're unhappy, about the fact that they want things to change. Because I think the problem is people just get complacent. When you start questioning it, when you start realizing that things can get better, Amazon is radicalizing the workers just by having them do the business that they want.
We're celebrating a victory here, but there's also going to be another election for another distribution center, which one of you works at. So what is the organizing that's going on now? What is the difference between that distribution center and JFK 8? And what's happening there? And are the issues the same, the other distribution center? That's a distribution, and JFK is a warehouse, right? Clarify that also.
Yeah, I mean, so that's the building that I work at, LBJ 5, the sortation center. It's the same thing. I think we've developed a really strong playbook. Every building is going to be different, so there's going to be slight different tactics in terms of the specific issues we're talking to workers about. But, you know, like Annie and Connor, like in the break rooms of JFK 8, developed, I think, like a phenomenal strategy to convince workers. And so I think we're just trying to borrow as much as we can from that. And hopefully have some of the JFK 8 organizers continue to do what the other organizers were trying to do from the outside during the JFK 8 election.
And you're about 1,500 there, and JFK was about 8,000. Is that the numbers?
Yeah, 1,600 in other JFK.
You know, I mean, the magnitude of this organizing drive was incredible. You haven't really gotten a sense of the conditions. And we haven't talked about the fact that one of the great things that comes from a union is that you have a grievance procedure. You have a mechanism to do something. I want you to tell us a little bit about the kind of work that each one of you did and how that informed your decision to go union. And Angelique, let's start with you, and then Connor and Julian.
When I first started at Amazon in 2018, I was an inbound, and I was a sewer. And sewing, it's a very tedious job. Basically, I was, in my opinion, it's one of the jobs in the warehouse where you're literally like a robot. you know, there's like this three-step ladder. You have to put in, like, there's rates, and you would have to put in a certain amount of items in a pod for within an hour. And I remember when I first started out, it was probably like 200 items. But now I think the rates went up to like 300, 350, right? When I had came back to Amazon, I got hired for outbound packer. And I would say that job is less strenuous, but it's still very tedious. I would say, you know, the lack of having an option for the type of hours within the building, because after a while, we kind of get used to the work. However, it's really the hours that they, you know, they sign us up for, they make us conform to, that is really stressful, especially on the body. Right now, I'm RT shift, 12-hour and 30-minute shifts with a 45-minute lunch break 3 days a week consecutively. That is just not an ideal way to have workers work. You know, I think there should be more shifts to offer within the warehouse. And even if you want to go part-time, you know, you run risk of not having your transfer approved, which is very unfortunate. They'll hire new people before they approve your transfer. That's something that Amazon was able to do because they ran on their own contract and they didn't have to worry about a union. You have people traveling from different boroughs. Like me personally, I live on Staten Island, but I know people in my department who live in Harlem, who live in New Jersey, and they come all the way to Staten Island to go back home and get 3-4 hours of sleep. They risk losing their job because Amazon, they drill in people's head that this is one of the best paying warehouses. But in all reality, it's like they still don't care about their employees and the physical and mental health of them.
Well, I'm going to pick on Connor next, because actually one of the last times I saw Connor, he was getting busted. So tell us about the conditions you faced and the treatment, because I think you were a little bit understated in how vicious Amazon really was.
What do you mean, busted?
I thought you were arrested.
Oh, no, I wasn't one of the ones.
Oh, you weren't one of the ones that was arrested.
Yeah.
I know Chris Small, your president, was.
Yeah, and Brett and Jason. But, yeah, Angie and I were there. We were watching it unfold. Thankfully, they didn't bring us to the station, too.
What actually happened?
Part of our strategy for organizing the workers was we would, you know, take some of the donations we brought in, and we would hold luncheons for the workers. And it was a great way for everybody to, you know, feel well-fed, and also an opportunity for them to come to us and get information about the union. We would do that in the break rooms. What would happen was Chris, who, you know, still doesn't have his job back. He's still an employee. So he would get the food for us, and he would bring it
into
the parking
lot. And we should just say, for people who don't know, Chris Small was fired, was one of the prime organizers, and is now the president of the union, but he still is a fired worker. Ah, the irony of things. I'm sorry. Continue.
Yeah, he was illegally terminated in March of 2020 for protesting unsafe working conditions. And to this day, he still is fighting to get his job back, which will happen. I'm positive, but, you know, we just don't know when. But he was bringing the food to us so that we could serve it to the workers, and Amazon didn't like that, and so they went to accuse him of trespassing, and we made the argument that, you know, it's a visitor lot. We have DoorDash drivers come in all the time to bring lunch. We have people's family members come to drop them off and wait in the parking lot. So why are they singling out Chris? It was just to interfere with our organizing, and then they didn't like that, so they left, and then they called the cops, and the cops said the same thing. You know, we're trespassing. We made the same argument, but we were about to leave, and then right as we were leaving and started arresting him, and then, you know, another worker came by and, you know, protested, said, you can't do that. And number one, this worker was disabled, who they were arresting, so they arrested that second worker, and then Chris was like, what are you guys doing? And they just roped him in and arrested him, too. So he wasn't even the first person they arrested. He was literally in the passenger seat of my car, and we were ready to drive away when that happened. So it just goes to show that Amazon will use the police as a way to threaten and intimidate people who are union organizing. But the problem with the police is that you call them, and they're very unpredictable. You never know how they're going to respond to a situation. So I think that's another example of something that backfired in their faces, because it just showed the workers in the building that Amazon really doesn't value the workers' rights, and they'll do anything to stop what they say is an ineffective union.
Your victory is reinvigorating the labor movement, but you still have a long way to go and a hard struggle and bargaining. How can people help you? People should get informed through your website and can make a donation.
Yeah, I mean, until we negotiate a contract, we're not collecting dues from the workers, and everybody has to vote to approve that contract, so we got to make sure it's a good one. Otherwise, the union will have no income. So right now, we're mainly on donations. We're trying to set up a shop soon so we can sell merchandise. We can sell ALU shirts. A lot of people have been asking for them. But also, I mean, we are, you know, kind of a grassroots volunteer effort. If you're an Amazon worker listening to this, please definitely get involved. If you're an outside volunteer with a particular skill set, you want to contribute to us because, you know, we're all doing this for free. Everything we do, whether you're like a graphic designer or whatever, you know, it's a community effort because, you know, whatever happens at Amazon affects all of us. So it's up to everybody in the community to get involved and get behind this effort.
And the website is?
It's AmazonLaborUnion.org.
And
you can also follow us on social media. Our Twitter is a good place to get information as well. It's at Amazon Labor.
Julian, this is for those of us who have been involved in organizing labor, involved in organizing union. We've watched for years as the union movement has really shriveled up. We've watched as there is business unionism, as union leaders very often became fat cats themselves. Here's a real grassroots effort from the bottom up. And you have created a spark of energy that truly, truly has been heard around the world. And I want you to give us a sense of how important you think your effort was in routing Jeff Bezos, in routing Amazon, one of the wealthiest companies and one of the largest employers in the world. How important is it what you all did? Julian?
I think it's incredibly important, right? I think that's why we're all doing it. If we didn't think it was important, we wouldn't be spending sleepless nights trying to make it happen. You know, like Chris Smalls, the president, he's been working nonstop at this for 2 years now. I think every single one of us has put our 100 in it. When it comes down to it, I don't want to say that this is like what we've done just now is like the end of the victory, right? It's frankly the beginning of the fight. We've unlocked the door into the maze. We're not out of it yet. It is important and it's monumental because, at least as far as I can tell, this is the first time we've seen genuine worker power, worker-led power in decades. And, you know, when you were talking about business unionism, this is the fight against that. This is the fight against not just sort of like bad pay or any one singular issue. This is the fight for workers to actually have a voice in their workplace again and in their unions again. Long term, hopefully what we'll see from this is the growth of a new type of worker power that I think could be truly revolutionary in this country.
And Angelica, what does it mean for women also to have been able to unionize this place? Because women went through horrific conditions, some of which you described. So how important do you think this is to women, to single heads of household, to women workers?
Oh, I think it's been incredibly important. Just seeing myself and women, you know, get together in a community and stick up for each other, it's been a real emotional roller coaster. The best thing we got from it was understanding each other even more and being there for each other even more. Being able to share our stories. Like I said, I had to be vulnerable and tell my story many times. But I know a lot of us, we're scared of judgment, right? And so that's how we bonded. And to keep those relationships and memories, I think, for this historic movement, I think it's one of the best things I've ever felt in my life.
Well, we want to say, workers of the world, unite. You have nothing to lose but your chains.
And a world to win.
And you have inspired all of us. Connor Spence, Julian Mitchell, Angelica Maldonado, you're going to wind up with a fabulous contract because we're all there in a labor community movement to support our magnificent Amazon workers. Thank you for your inspiration. Thank you for your spark in rejuvenating a workers' movement. because after all, it's the workers who create all the wealth. It's been great speaking with you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Still riffing off the victory of the Amazon workers, the grassroots workers to unionize, let's hear from one of the greatest inspirational voices for the working class's rights and benefits, because all labor has dignity, Dr. Martin Luther King.
And to commemorate and continue his legacy, let's listen to Dr. King as he addressed the striking Memphis sanitation workers in Memphis in their union hall to join in their fight against the war on the workers.
And we're going to go out with Martin Luther King, as we said, calling for a general strike. What could be better? For Building Bridges, I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
And I'm Ken Nash.
And we need power. Freedom is not something that is voluntarily given by the oppressor. It is something that must be demanded by the oppressed. Freedom is not some lavish dish that the power structure and the white forces in policy-making positions will voluntarily hand out on a silver platter while the Negro merely furnishes the appetite.
That's right. That's right.
If we are going to get equality, if we are going to get adequate wages, we are going to have to struggle for it. Now, you know what? You may have to escalate the struggle a bit. If they keep refusing and they will not recognize the union and will not agree for the checkoff of the collection of dues, I tell you what you ought to do, and you're together here enough to do it. In a few days, you ought to get together and just have a general work stoppage in the city of Memphis. Not a Negro in this city will go to any job downtown.